Once again, it is time to be joined by David Tarachuk, who is the host of the Media Beat here on Robin Hood Radio. Now, David has his own website, themediabeat.us. He is also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief, and it's nice to have him in here just about every Friday morning. Good morning, David. How are you?
Hello there. I'm glad to be reporting in again from the media capital of the world, New York City, and talking again with the always up-to-date Marshall Miles. Marshall, I've got a quick update for you on this city itself. New York City is in lockdown. The annual meeting of the United Nations General Assembly has done its usual thing. You cannot get around town. Tight security and the incessant motorcades fill international leaders everywhere, up and down the avenues and across the streets. It's meant that the president is in town, of course, and the leader of the United Nations host nation gets to speak early in the whole business. And Joe Biden's very first words were to describe Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And I'm going to quote here directly from the floor of the General Assembly: a brutal, needless war, a war chosen by one man, to be very blunt. And this seems to me to fit in very pretty well with what the media has been ascribing to Joe Biden in recent days. Now, in my column that you mentioned only yesterday, I was reflecting on several leadership changes in the last couple of weeks. We've seen in my old home country a new king take over from the old queen, and a new prime minister, Liz Truss, replacing the played-out former guy, to use a favorite phrase. But according to some in the American media, we also have a new United States president. He's wholly changed, they claim, out with the all the remaining traces, anyway, of the soft grandfatherly approach, we're told. And in with the red in tooth and claw political fighter. Even the Associated Press, which is usually extra careful with its language, as you know, described this new development in punchy terms. I'll quote them: gloves off, no holds barred approach from Biden. And we're talking about him taking on what he calls MAGA Republicans, as well as Vladimir Putin, of course. It's very clear, I think we can see it without question now, that the president has fully entered into the midterms campaign, determined to fight his case and push his Democratic Party into a better congressional position, if that's at all possible. Maybe it could work. It was interesting to see the NBC network starting to seem positively enthusiastic about his chances with this choice of a headline: Democrats get another poll indicating an improving midterm landscape. It's very hard to register this in your calendar mind, but it's only 46 days now before we were reporting on whether that polling is actually a true prediction. Not long now.
You know, what's interesting about what Joe Biden is doing is, I think, besides wanting to try to get a little more support in the Senate and keep their slim majority in the House, what he wants to do is set the tone for the Democratic Party for the next 2 years. And instead of being the great negotiator with the Republican Party, which he's going to continue to do, but he's going to rely more on his own Democratic Party and work more for the general goals, whether they're going to make people happy or not. I think he's taken all this into perspective, and even though he said, I think it was just yesterday or the day before, that he hasn't made any plans yet for whether he's going to run for re-election or not, I think he's still trying to lay the groundwork, if they can get through this midterm election, where the Democrats will be in a much better place when 2024 comes around.
Yeah, that's right. And the tone he's trying to set is I mean, I already used the word punchy because that seemed to be a recurring word, but it has involved becoming more obviously, I mean, he's obviously been a Democrat, but more obviously Democrat with a capital D in what he's presenting to the American electorate in general, and it's clearly a for him, it's he's described it several times over, as he did in his first initial run for president, as a fight for the soul of the nation. I mean, it's existential for him, but he's seeing it very definitely through party political lenses. I looked to my own local magazine, New York Magazine, never to be confused with the New Yorker, and it called the big anti-MAGA speech in Philadelphia a blistering primetime address, but it felt it necessary to provide us with a guide to what it calls the intense debate that has been engendered across the nation by that speech. I'm not sure that that's what's going on, but clearly there are going to be differences of opinion in response to this new tone that the president is adopting, which kind of does suggest he's running again, but maybe not. Maybe it's a broader matter than that, attempting to establish what kind of a soul, political soul, the country has. New York Magazine was criticizing the Washington Post because its editorial board, the Post's board, was complaining that the Biden-inspired partisanship that's being evoked here is replacing that preferable attribute of patriotism, as if they're somehow opposites. So I looked at the Post and see what they actually said. And they were kind of touching about Biden's approach. They said, you don't persuade people by scolding or demeaning them, of course, meaning the other side. But that's how the president's speech landed for many conservatives of goodwill. It's as if people are seeing Biden's efforts as being to bring in conservatives who are not necessarily MAGA Republicans. Well, that's an interesting strategy. Whether there are enough of those so-called conservatives of goodwill is highly contentious. Now, the undecided, the great sort of somewhat something like 30% of people who still, even at this stage, are saying they're undecided between the two major parties, are the persuadable bunch, presumably. And that's what the new, more toughly campaigning Biden seems to be aiming at for the next 2 years before the 2024 presidential election.
Okay, we'll move on from Joe Biden, who, by the way, you're right, he looks like a totally different president than he did 3 months ago, much more active. But let's move on to another president who really has, I think, made a classic mistake of biting off more than he could chew, and that is Vladimir Putin. The war is not going well. Russia is actually losing the war right now, and he has this call-up of 300,000 soldiers. They are in the military already. It's going to take a while for them all to come through. But he's got his back up against the wall now, especially with the threats that he threw out in his speech a couple of days ago.
Right, and if you were on the floor of the United Nations, not the Security Council, not the General Assembly, but in the Security Council yesterday, he appeared pretty friendless. Even major countries who were either, statutorily on the Security Council or were part of the special hearing that was held yesterday, which involved, members of the International Criminal Court reviewing evidence of war crimes, you'll see that Putin doesn't have much support in the world at large for this military adventure of his, and whether that is reflected in the population of his own country's people is of course, you know, infamously hard to judge, Russia being the kind of society that it is. But sure, being in a corner, as you put it, is pretty much what is pretty much how he's placed himself. I mean, he renewed his threat of using nuclear weapons, and he issued that call-up notice you mentioned for more than a 250,000 Russians as army conscripts. Just a little taste of what might be going on inside his country. All this led to one, the call-up, led to one minor but telling media incident. The host of a Russian YouTube channel, it has its, it's not totally independent, it has its associations with the opposition leader Navalny, but one of its hosts made a prank call to the son of Kremlin's chief spokesman. He pretended to be a military official, and he asked the famous son, "Are you going to show up at the conscription office tomorrow at 10 a.m?" And the guy was taken in. He used his famous father's name, which he doesn't normally use in his everyday life, but he made a point of using his father's name, and very interestingly emphasized that he would not be showing up at the conscription office. So, you know, it's being read, and you know, understandably, that he regarded his parentage as some kind of passport to draft dodging. So it was an enlightening little moment. But this bit of trickery happened against a background of some popular protest against the war. And just as inevitably, I guess, a harsh crackdown on them, 1,300 people from 38 different cities detained. And of course, they could face, because of legislation brought in back in February when the invasion started, they could face up to 15 years in prison for dissenting against the war. And there have also been countless Russian men of military age dashing for the border to escape the new draft.
Yep.
And in the areas that Russian occupation applies now in Ukraine, we're seeing reports that as soon as today, those sham elections that they're planning, this is Putin's latest great idea, they should take place for local people to supposedly vote to join Russia, while at the same time the Ukrainians themselves are settling back into those Russian-occupied territories that they've been able to fight back and retake. It's an interesting position. Things have just not gone at all like Putin planned back in February.
You know, when you bring this up, I was reading a story off of Reuters yesterday, and they headlined it this way: flights leaving Russia selling like hotcakes, prices getting jacked up, airlines ordered to stop selling to military-aged male adults. This is significant in the fact, David, that in Putin's really strong days, something like this would never happen. Where, you know, you saw pictures at the borders of cars of men of a certain age trying to leave the country, along with they're not allowed to fly out of the country. This is all very telling on, I won't call it tenuous, but for Vladimir Putin, I think he's in as a tenuous position as he's ever been in.
Sure. And when you get young men, youngish men, it's quite a span of age that we're talking about here. There are lots of 40-year-olds leaving the country too, 40-year-old males. The sheer, boil it down to the fact that these youngish men would prefer to be in Serbia than in Russia. Must if Putin thinks about it at all. And of course, the information is available to him, whether he's going to take it in or even allow it to have any effect on his policy making or his decision making is a different question. But if he takes those facts in, it must certainly challenge his notion of himself as the invincible Vlad that he clearly did think of himself as being when he launched that so-called military operation. The people are still not allowed to call it a war, of course. Those 15 years in prison would face you if you are caught saying that, which is why so many Western journalists have had to leave Russia now. And the few that are valiantly continuing their work in Moscow are finding it hard to really get copy out that reflects what's genuinely going on. And it just adds to that whole sensation that we must have as outsiders looking at Russia. But it may not be North Korea, but on the other hand, it's very hard to get a handle on the real state of the popular feeling overall about Putin and about Putin's war.
And when you look at the elections that they're trying to shove in place, I just don't think it's going to have any effect on the Ukrainian leadership. I think they're going to keep up with their offensive in the northeastern part of Ukraine, and obviously they're going to keep up in the south, because the very least they can do is, if they cut Russian supply lines, they can bring in as many people as they want to replace the people that are there, and that's not going to help. This really has turned into, I hate to say this, but there is a slight advantage in the Ukrainian position right now. I mean, the disadvantage is they still are missing 20% of their land that was once 30%, but they are in a far better position, especially heading into the winter, than they were when this war started.
Yeah, the fight back has been impressive, but obviously it's not easy, and especially as winter comes. I mean, people are going to be freezing. So many the population's living conditions are vastly, many have been utterly destroyed, and just down to the fact that there's a massive shortage of windows, not enough glass to reglaze all the many windows that have been blown out, and winter is coming, and the Ukrainian winter is infamously bitter, it's a situation in which you see two contending parties who are not so much settled in for a long slog as just a thoroughgoing battering in each direction, and in the case of the Russian response to the upsurge against them, they're turning, of course, to more and more assaults upon civilians. Not that that's anything new, but it's intensifying now with the civilian apparatus, the whole sort of infrastructure of civilian life in Ukrainian areas, Ukrainian held areas, being pummeled by missile fire, which will take out the electricity supply and the water supply. The Russians don't exactly have an advantage. It's pretty clear that they're now in a state of some retreat. But they've still got this capacity for making life incredibly uncomfortable, unbearable, I'd say, for the Ukrainian population. And the picture just intensifies of a vicious military, cumbersome though it is, vast and unwieldy, just pummeling away at a civilian population, which should never have been the targets in the first place. And, understandably, it's we've been looking at at a situation in which more and more we can see the justification for having the world court, the World Criminal Court, in evidence and doing its evidence reviewing work in public, almost at the United Nations Security Council yesterday, and. you know, just reviewing in some degree of detail the 7 months' worth of mounting evidence for murderous war crimes being committed under Putin's command. A war of one man's making, and the finger of guilt is pointing very clearly at that one man now in a very public arena, and he's becoming more and more, as I was saying before, more and more friendless on the international stage. Whatever might be happening is dwindling support popularly inside Russia.
And we'll come back to this country in the last couple of minutes here. The January 6th hearings, actual Mar-a-Lago situation here has really fallen apart for Donald Trump, with a judge basically overturning what a previous judge said. And then you've got lawsuits in New York, civil lawsuits now. You've got the lawsuits in Georgia. It is a very hazardous time for Donald Trump and his family.
Sure, it's worth pointing out that reversal of the judgment on the Mar-a-Lago documents, I mean the White House documents that ended up in Mar-a-Lago, I should describe them as, the criminal probe by the FBI and the Justice Department was reversed by an appeal court judge, a set of judges, the interesting thing, three judges overturning the earlier judgment of a Trump-appointed judge. But two out of the three appeal court judges were Trump appointees, too. That's worth noting. And the sort of political reaction to this turnaround, this dissipation, if you like, this dissolving of the Trump's so-called defense against the FBI probe has been interesting. I quote someone I don't normally quote, not very often anyway, John Thune, Senator John Thune. He's just below Mitch McConnell in the totem pole of Republican leadership in the Senate. He's the Senate whip. What an office to hold, huh? He said there's a process for declassifying documents. And he said, I'm quote him here, I think it ought to be adhered to and followed. There's something going on. Senior Republican senators getting a little soft in their support for Trump. And, of course, as you say, he's in legal trouble on so many fronts now. And we can look forward next week to another public hearing of the January 6th committee of the House. And, you know, all in all, the Trump family... because, of course, the family, too, have been accused in the civil suit by the New York State Attorney General of fraud, quite simply. These are dark days for the Trump family. And their support at the levels where they've been accustomed to having it seems to be weakening quite clearly.
And as I've described to quite a few people who said, well, you know, he declared, he took the Fifth Amendment. The great thing about a civil trial is that a jury can take that into consideration and they can actually look at that as an admission of guilt in a civil trial. It's totally different in a civil trial.
Yeah, and just generally speaking, the burden of proof is lower in a civil suit than it would be in a criminal prosecution. Though our New York Attorney General, we must remember, has also referred this case to federal prosecutors as well. But anyway, for the moment, the civil suit will be pursued. And as you say, it's an even less friendly environment for Trump himself and the Trump family than they've ever actually suffered before. I think this is the most serious case amongst the many litigious experiences that Trump and his family have gone through over the last three decades.
Well, you've got a new government in England, Great Britain. You've got a new king. You've got, of course, the unrest in Russia with Putin. And you've got what's going on in this country. And the Chinese economy is about to blow up. We're in some very strange, difficult, and interesting times, David.
Yeah. and we think of I don't know how to put this quite exactly, but the backdrop against which all of this flurry and uncertainty is going on is a warming planet with the most appalling kind of climate extremes taking place, like Puerto Rico at the moment. It's a picture of something close to what my grandmother would have called utter chaos.
Yeah,
her Scottish burr.
There's no doubt about it. Well, we'll see what happens with the chaos next week. David, have a great weekend.
Look forward to talking to you next week.
Bye-bye. David Terechuk with the Media Beat. Once again, you can find his fine column and writings at themediabeat.us, and you can also find this show at robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on the Media Beat with David Terechuk.